We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Parikshit cursed by a Brahmana boy. Verse number 46. Dharmapalo Narapati,
Dharmapalo Narapati,
Satu Samrat Brihat Charvaha,
Satu Samrat
Brihat Charvaha,
Satu Samrat Brihat Charvaha,
Sakshan Mahabhagavato,
Sakshan Mahabhagavato,
Rajashir Haya Medhayat,
Rajashir Haya Medhayat,
Kshutri Shrama Yuto Dino,
Kshutri Shrama Yuto Dino,
Naivasmachapamarhati,
Naivasmachapamarhati.
Word to word translation, Dharmapalaha,
Dharmapalaha,
the protector of religion,
the protector of religion,
Narapatihi,
Narapatihi,
the king,
king.
Saha,
he,
to, but, Samrat,
emperor,
Brihat, highly,
Shravaha,
celebrated,
Sakshat,
directly,
Mahabhagavata,
the first class devotee of the Lord,
Raja Rishihi,
saint amongst the royal order,
Hayamedhayat,
great performer of horse sacrifices,
Kshut,
hunger,
Trit,
thirst,
Shramayutaha,
tired and fatigued,
Dinaha,
stricken,
Na,
never,
Eva,
thus,
Asmat,
by us,
Chapam,
curse,
Arhati,
deserves. Translation: the Emperor Parikshit is a pious king. He is highly celebrated and is a first-class devotee of the personality of Godhead. He is a saint amongst royalty and he has performed many horse sacrifices. When such a king is tired and fatigued, being stricken with hunger and thirst, he does not at all deserve to be cursed. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After explaining the general code of relating to the royal position and asserting that the king can do no wrong and therefore is never to be condemned, the sage Shamika wanted to say something about Emperor Parikshit specifically. The specific qualification of Maharaj Parikshit is summarized herein. The king, even calculated as a king only, was most celebrated as a ruler who administered the religious principles of the royal order. In the Shastra, the duties of all castes and order of society are prescribed. All the qualities of a Kshatriya mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita 1843 were present in the person of the emperor. He was also a great devotee of the Lord and a self-realized soul. Cursing such a king when he was tired and fatigued with hunger and thirst was not at all proper. Shamika Rishi thus admitted from all sides that Maharaj Parikshit was cursed most unjustly. Although all the Brahmanas were aloof from the incident, still, for the childish action of a Brahmana boy, the whole world situation was changed. Thus, Rishi Shamika, a Brahmana, took responsibility for all deterioration of the good orders of the world. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnana Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha
శ్రీ చైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూప కదా మహ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం. జయ శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే.
హరే కృష్ణ. హియర్ ఇన్ దిస్ వర్స్ Shamika Rishi, who is the father of Shringi, the Brahman boy, who cursed Maharaj Parikshit to death, analyzes different qualities and qualifications of King Parikshit. So in the Vedic civilization, before awarding punishment or reward, a proper assessment is done on the personality and also the degree, the seriousness of the offense is also taken into consideration. So here in this verse, as we can see, Maharaj Parikshit was cursed just because of a minor offense that he committed. That was, he went into the ashram of Shamika Rishi and he found him to be in trance, meditating. Since he was fatigued by hunger and thirst, he put on a snake, a dead snake, as a garland around this great Rishi. So this was the offense committed by Maharaj Parikshit. And when Shringi's father, the Brahman boy's father, Shamika Rishi, when he came out from trance, he realized that there was a dead snake around his neck. He didn't take that to be very serious at all. Rather, he actually threw away that dead snake. And then he saw his son crying. And Shamika Rishi asked his son Shringi what had happened. Then Shringi explained that he had cursed the emperor to death for this offense, for disrespecting his father. So Shamika Rishi, he was not at all pleased by this incident, because he is giving different reasons why his boy has committed a great sin. So in the specific verse, Shamika Rishi is analyzing and presenting different qualifications of King Parikshit. So the first point mentioned here is that he is a king. So just being a king, a trained monarch, he deserves respect. He is not an ordinary personality. So when we speak here, a trained monarch, in the Vedic times, a king was trained from the childhood. And it is quite opposite to the current political affairs and the political leaders. The reason is currently there is no training for the so-called leaders. Many times in India, for instance, many of the leaders, many of the members of parliament, many have criminal background. What is their background? They have criminal background. And there are laws enforced to find out who have committed what kind of offenses before coming into some responsible position. So many have criminal background. And there is no specific training at all for political leaders. Okay, you must have such and such qualification, because they are ruling over a country and they have to interact with other countries. So they are determining the lives of millions and millions of people. Still, they don't have any qualification. There is no training. And most of the time, it is a politics. And in the political scene, someone comes into the power and then they get trained how to rule a country, on-the-job training. And if you get a simple task, even if you go for any simple job, there is a proper kind of training that is provided. But when it comes to ruling over a big country, there is no specific training that is given. So a Kshatriya king, on the other hand, is trained in Vedas. It's not only for Brahmanas. Even a Kshatriya king is trained in Vedas. He knows Vedas. It is mentioned regarding Yudhishthira Maharaj that he was as learned as a Brahmana. So even though he was a Kshatriya, he was as learned as a Brahmana. Not only that, they knew Yuddha Tantra. They knew the etiquette of battle. They knew the whole Dhanurveda, which is describing the military science. And also they knew Arthashastra, the economics. And not only that, they even knew different kinds of arts. So these Kshatriya kings, they were well trained to rule over the kingdom. And here Maharaj Parikshit, he's an emperor. He was practically ruling the whole world. So he was highly qualified. So this is the first point that Shamika Rishi presents, that why his boy Sringi had committed a great offense by cursing this great king to death. So first point is, he is a king. That in itself is a big qualification. Second, he is a celebrated administrator. So it is not just he is a king, but he is respected among all different kings, because he was able to perform all religious duties according to his position. And he had all the qualities of a Kshatriya to the fullest degree. So as quoted in the purport from the 18th chapter, the different qualities of a Kshatriya: heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity and leadership. So he had all these qualities, because we know a few chapters before, when Maharaj Parikshit was encountered with Kali personified, he could completely subjugate him. He could just completely chastise him, and he was about to kill the Kali personified. He had the ability to control Kali personified to the fullest degree, and he was ready to kill the Kali personality. So now, current rulers are completely under the shelter, completely under the grip of Kali, because they are under the grip and they can't do anything against the age of Kali. So see the power of Maharaj Parikshit. With his own sword, he was just roaming around in the kingdom, and he could kill Kali personified. So this is the power of Maharaj Parikshit. So he was not just a king, but he was a great administrator. He could enforce law perfectly. And third point that is mentioned is that he has performed many horse sacrifices, because it is part of the religious duties of a king is to perform horse sacrifices for the welfare of the society, for the welfare of the whole world. And Maharaj Parikshit was able to perform horse sacrifices. And we had to understand, to perform such Ashwamedha Yajna need a lot of paraphernalia. And the kingdom must have such paraphernalia, and they must offer those paraphernalia unto the emperor. And he was able to organize all these things. And he had great priests who could perform Ashwamedha Yajna. So Shamika Rishi mentions this as one of the qualifications of this great king. And finally, that is the foremost point mentioned in this verse. That is, apart from all this, Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee of the Lord. In fact, that point supersedes all other points, because he is the greatest devotee of the Lord. So we can see Maharaj Parikshit, even when he was traveling in his kingdom, he heard about the glorious past of his grandfather. They were Pandavas. When he heard the devotion of Pandavas, Maharaj Parikshit was overwhelmed in ecstatic devotion for Krishna. So this is the quality of Maharaj Parikshit. And his devotion is further shown when he actually accepted the curse and when he prepared himself for death. So that's why the whole Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken, because it was the divine arrangement by which Maharaj Parikshit could hear Srimad Bhagavatam from his spiritual master, Shukadev Goswami. We had to understand, even Shukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, both were equally qualified. They were qualified. They were both pure devotees. So it was just a matter of, it was just customary that one accepted the position of a disciple and one accepted the position of a spiritual master. So both were qualified. Both were pure devotees of the Lord. So such a great devotee, such a pure devotee was cursed. And according to the Vedic system, such a great devotee is Raja Rishi, is a saint among the kings. And not only that, he is Naradeva. Naradeva means he is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the kingdom. So such a person was cursed to death by an inexperienced, uncultured Brahmin boy, Sringi. So this is the scene. So Shamika Rishi is specifically presenting qualifications of Maharaj Parikshit. Now this leads to a very interesting point, that is, in the Vedic system, the award of punishment and reward is according to different considerations. It is not just a single point, okay, due to this he must be punished. There are many factors that are taken into consideration of the person who is accused, who has committed a sin. In the current civil system or in the current criminal system, generally the offense is considered. The person is not considered so much. Whereas in the Vedic system, the offense and the person who has committed the offense are taken into consideration. So there are different sets of rules for different classes of people, even according to Varna and Ashram. So Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanapra, Sannyas, the set of rules are different for them. And we can see it is quite complicated at times to make the right decisions. We can hear in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto itself, we can see a classic example for this with respect to the awarding punishment to Ashwatthama, the son of Dronacharya. Because as we know, Ashwatthama killed the sleeping sons of Draupadi. All five sons were killed. And Arjuna, with the help of Krishna, captured Ashwatthama and brought right in front of Draupadi, who was crying, who was mourning. Right, placed him completely captured, completely in ropes, covered with ropes, so he couldn't even move. Just like an animal, he was placed right in front of Draupadi. So this scene is very important, because this pastime shows how different elements, different points are considered before awarding a punishment, and how that particular punishment is given. So here, when Ashwatthama was placed just like an animal in front of Draupadi, she was not overwhelmed by emotion. She was not just crying and telling, okay, you must just kill him, I want his life. Rather, Draupadi said, he must be released. So this is a very interesting point. And Arjun wanted to kill, and he wanted the sanction of his wife, Draupadi, and then kill Ashwatthama, because he had taken the lives of all sleeping sons. It's such a heinous crime. Now, Draupadi, he presented arguments, reasons, in different levels. So, again, here, before giving any punishment, different factors are taken into account. It's not just one point. So here, Draupadi gives very interesting reasons why Ashwatthama must be released. The first reason Draupadi gives is, according to piety, killing would go against the religion. She said, I cannot actually tolerate seeing the son of a great Brahmana completely wound up in robes. And she said, it is better to release him, because Brahmanas are in general considered spiritual masters. So Ashwatthama must be released. So because of her piety, she felt that a son of a Brahmana must not be treated just like an animal. So she mentioned, okay, he must be released. That was the first reason. So here, very interesting how different reasons Draupadi, even in this most difficult circumstance, is presenting. Very difficult, because for a mother, losing all the children, still, she presented this argument. Second, she presented based on reason and justice. Because you have all learned military science by the mercy of Dronacharya. And many of these aspects of this military science are confidential. So only by the mercy of that teacher that one could learn this. So Dronacharya has awarded such a mercy upon you, and only because of that you are able to win different battles, including the battle of Kurukshetra, because one needs the mercy of teacher. So you have actually already received that mercy. So even according to justice and reason, we shouldn't kill Ashwatthama, even though he had committed such a heinous act. Third reason was, it is based on kindness and humanity. Because Ashwatthama's mother, who is Kripi, she didn't throw herself into the fire as Sati, because she had a son, that is Ashwatthama. So just because of humanitarian considerations, we shouldn't kill Ashwatthama, because mother is there, still there, and the son is representing the father. And since son is representing the father, she didn't commit Sati. And due to this reason, we had to be compassionate. We had to be kindness, and just a humanitarian consideration. So this was one of the reasons. Then she explains further. She says, okay, we had to be merciful, considering that he is coming from a religious family and he is coming from a glorious family. So considering this, we had to be merciful unto Ashwatthama. So these are the four reasons. Then Draupadi continues. She says, we have to show equality unto the mother of Ashwatthama, Kripi. Why? Because I am a mother and I am suffering because I have lost all my five sons. And if the same thing happens to Kripi, the mother of Ashwatthama, she would lament and she had to go through the same kind of pain. So as a pure devotee, again, Draupadi, she is showing the equality, that is, seeing others suffer, her own suffering, she can project that unto others. And she didn't want her to go through such a painful situation. So she said, no, shouldn't be done. And the final reason she presented was, we had to be grateful because we had to show respect to a great family. So even though he has done such an offense, still, because of his family, we have to pardon. So this was the six reasons presented by Draupadi. And what happened? Who objected this? Bhimasen. Bhimasen said, everyone, actually Yudhishthira Maharaj agreed, okay, it looks fair. Even Arjun was also satisfied with the six reasons. But Bhimasen, he said, no, we must kill him. And he actually moved forward to kill, capture Ashwatthama and just to break him into pieces. So Draupadi came in between Ashwatthama and Bhima. So it was like, it's a very emotional, very an action scene, where Ashwatthama is going to be killed. But Krishna again interfered. Krishna manifested his four-handed form. He usually, with his dear associates, he was always manifesting his two-handed form. But in this particular instance, he manifested his four-handed form And with two hands, he pushed Bhima. And with two hands, he slightly pushed Draupadi. And in that way, he said no. Then he said, Arjun, that you must take the right decision. You must satisfy your wife. And at the same time, you must satisfy Bhimasen. So, actually he was put into the spot where Arjun had to take the right decision. See, here we can see, in this Vedic culture, everything, we cannot do anything according to one's own whim. But it has to be done according to the Vedic injunctions. So Arjuna cannot just act whimsically, but he had to satisfy everyone according to the instructions of the Supreme Lord Krishna. So Arjuna immediately understood what he had to do. Because he's a pure devotee and he had the mercy of the Lord. What he did? He just severed the jewel from his head. And it is mentioned that this jewel had a lot of potency. Because of this jewel, Ashwatthama, he was never tired, he was never fatigued, he could tolerate hunger and thirst. In fact, it is mentioned that Ashwatthama is not an ordinary personality. He is a special personality who has an amsha of Lord Shiva and an amsha of anger and lust. So, a very unique personality. Amsha of Shiva, anger and lust. So, he is combined together in the form of Ashwatthama. So, he appeared as a Brahmin. So, mentioned he shouldn't be killed. So he just severed the jewel. And that's it. So when the jewel was lost, he lost all his potency. He lost all his bodily luster. And then Pandavas just sent him out from the camp. So in that way, Arjuna could actually make the right decision in this apparently contradicting situation. So we had to see here again, different factors are taken into consideration. So the decision is not just whimsical or one-sided, rather many factors are considered. So that is the reason even among devotees there are classifications. We say bhakta, everyone is a bhakta, everyone is a devotee. But at the same time, according to Vaishnava philosophy, we have classification of devotees also. We don't just say, yes, everyone is a devotee, but at the same time we classify devotees. Right? And here, even in the classification of devotees, there are many factors that are taken into consideration. Say for instance, we say Kanishtha, a neophyte devotee, we say a Madhyama, a intermediate devotee, we say an Uttama, a perfect devotee. However, even this classification of devotee in itself is based on different factors. It's not just one factor. So that is a very important point that we have to understand. So in this, one factor is faith. We say faith is a factor, right? In classification of devotees, faith. Again, even in this faith, there are different aspects. One aspect of faith is, generally we say faith in Shastra. But further it is, faith in Shastra, that is fine. More than that, faith in the objective of devotional service and the faith in the process of devotional service in itself. So when we say faith, it includes faith in Shastra, which can be further explained as the faith in the objective of devotional service and the process of devotional service. So when you say faith, okay, there are different reasons. And here also, how can we judge? Say for instance, a Madhyama devotee is supposed to discriminate. How can we judge? We can judge by the application of the faith in Shastra. That is how one is applying those principles in one's life. With that, we can actually judge where one is standing. So if you say, okay, I know many verses from Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, but if we ask for some service, you know, my dear Prabhu, would you be able to do such and such service? If we say, no, I can't do any service. If we say that, it shows that, you know, we don't have actually real faith in the process. Okay, I can give lectures, but I can't get up for Mangalarati. Why? Because it's too difficult. You know, it's just too much for me. If that is our condition, it shows that we really don't have faith in the process of devotional service. And at the time of difficulties, if we are actually challenging God, if we are challenging Krishna, and if we are trying to find fault in Krishna, that shows that we don't have sufficient faith in Krishna. So these are inference. From this we can understand where we are standing. We can even see in ourselves. Because what kind of thoughts are coming into our mind. With that we can understand in terms of faith where we are standing. We don't have to judge others. At least we can judge ourselves where we are standing based on this. In fact, also another aspect of faith is, you know, in terms of application, some devotees, they plan for the future. Currently work hard and make money, and devotional service comes later. Some people, they plan for the retired devotional life. At the retirement, how can I perform so much of devotional service? And for that sake, I need to have enough money. So they forget present and just go for the future. So what's the guarantee that we would live such a long time? So we had to understand, what are we doing for Krishna right now? This is the opportunity for us to serve Krishna. So what are we trying to do for Krishna right now? So if we have that in the mind, then we can understand, okay, how this faith is manifested in our practical life. Moving further, again, Shraddha, this faith is classified into three basically. According to, for a neophyte, it is common. You know, it is just a little bit of faith here or there. It can be shaken very easily. And for a Madhyam, for an intermediate devotee, that faith is more stronger. And for an Uttama, for an advanced devotee, that is complete. Complete faith in Krishna. So that is one aspect. Second is how a devotee is dealing with other devotees or other living entities and Krishna's energies. So in other words, what is one's realization on one's connection with Krishna and Krishna's energies? So here again we know, for a neophyte, he can see Krishna, say he accept the Lord, okay, he is the Lord, the deity form, he may accept the Lord, but he has no consideration for devotees of the Lord. So I am ready to serve Krishna, but if a devotee asks for something, I won't do that. So that is a neophyte mentality. Right? And for as a Madhyama, that's different because he can discriminate. He knows Krishna is the object of love. He knows that one has to make friends with fellow devotees, and he has to take guidance from advanced devotees and serve. And one has to help a devotee who is junior to us. And if somebody is not a devotee at all, then if he is not envious, an innocent person must be helped to take to Krishna consciousness. Whereas if somebody is outrightly envious of Krishna and his devotees, a Madhyama devotee, an intermediate devotee would just keep away from such a person. So this is different, and that is a Madhyama mentality. Whereas for Uttama, he sees everyone in connection to Krishna. So that is a higher platform. He sees everyone as devotees of Krishna. And even with respect to energies also, there is a very important point when it comes to the energies of the Lord. For instance, a neophyte person, he cannot understand the connection between Krishna's energies. Say for example, we have so many Krishna's paraphernalia there. If a new person, he will kick our prasadam bucket. We've seen many times. A tub, they'll kick, they push with the feet. So they cannot understand, as a neophyte cannot understand the connection between, that is Krishna's energy used in Krishna's service, and Krishna himself. Can't see that. So that is neophyte mentality. But as one advances, one understands, okay, how to treat Krishna's energy and how to use Krishna's energy in Krishna's service. So that is seeing Krishna everywhere. And third point is again preaching. It's very important. Preaching according to scriptures and realized knowledge. So for a neophyte, such a thing doesn't exist. He cannot preach. He may try to preach, but he can get affected by opposing elements. I can give you an example. One of my relative, he went to a temple and he got preached by a neophyte. So this person, he went to the temple and he was there. So one person approached and started speaking, and that continued, and then started preaching quite a bit of philosophy. And this person, next day he went home and took a printout of few of his own philosophies based on some Mayavad philosophers. And next day he went and gave this preacher this particular, you know, whatever print he had describing some Mayavad philosophy. And our preacher read that and got completely confused. And she couldn't reconcile what's actually going on. So she had the right intention to preach, but at the same time, when some opposing arguments are presented, got completely bewildered. And it took a few devotees to counsel her and make her to, you know, normal standard. Okay, what you're doing is right and what is presented is wrong. So that is what happens when someone preaches, when it's very, very neophyte, cannot understand what is what. But with some understanding, one can preach, or preach according to one capacity. If we preach beyond our capacity, again, we are actually falling into the same category. If we are presenting things which we cannot understand at all, and that is, again, we are acting on a neophyte platform. Whereas for a Madhyama, he can cite scriptures and he can preach. And whereas an Uttama, he is completely well-versed in the scriptures and he can present arguments and reasons accordingly, according to time, place and circumstances, because he has complete realization of Krishna consciousness. So this is the third aspect. So when we are classifying devotees, still there are different factors. It is faith we describe, understanding the connection between Krishna, Krishna's devotees and Krishna's energies. Third, preaching. And on the fourth, it is chanting. So we don't finish here, again chanting. As Bhagavatam says, Nirvurta tashir upagiya mana bhavoshada chrotra mano bhirama ka uttama shloka gunanuvada puman virajyeta vina pashubhina. In this verse, Srila Prabhupada explains the three kinds of chanting. The highest one is Nirvurta tashir. That is, one is completely devoid of any kind of material attachment, any kind of material consideration. So when one chants holy name out of pure love for the Lord, that is Nirvurta tashir upagiyamanat. Then second one is Bhava aushadhi. Bhava aushadhi means the medicine for material existence. So when a intermediate devotee is supposed to chant with this understanding, that is, okay, I may have taste for chanting or I may not have taste for chanting. My mind may allow me to chant today or may not. But whatever it is, I am going to chant my prescribed rounds sincerely. So that is Madhyama platform. So that is Aushad. He sees, okay, this is the medicine. And if we have a medicine, then we take whether we like it or not. So in the same way, Prabhupada says, okay, this is Aushad. If somebody is taking it as an Aushad, okay, that's fine. So since one is trying to avoid all the offenses, since that endeavor is there to avoid the offenses against the holy name, then it will act as a clearing stage. So Namabhas, the clearing stage. So that is the stage of Madhyama. And for a neophyte, it is said, it's very interesting, for a neophyte it is mentioned, Manobhiramat, that is just an attraction. There is a, okay, it is nice. I want to chant, maybe here, there, not necessarily with proper attention. Just like if you go on Harinam, people, you know, come and just chant. That is considered, it's mentioned, Prabhupada says, it's a kind of a neophyte. You know, the people just attracted to the holy name. So that is a neophyte kind of chanting. And it is basically the chanting with offenses. So that is neophyte chanting. So we take all this into consideration if you say, who is a devotee? We know what is our stand as a devotee. Now, the point is, we have to consider all aspects. We cannot just focus on one aspect. In fact, to explain this, there is a very nice pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, on his way to Vrindavan, reached Varanasi, where he instructed Sanatana Goswami. The Sanatana Shiksha is presented there. And one day, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking to Sanatana Goswami, two residents of Varanasi who were Gaudiya Vaishnavas, who were great devotees of Lord Chaitanya, approached the Lord. One was Chandrasekhar Acharya and the other one was Tapan Mishra. So they had a great concern. The concern was that these Mayavadi sannyasis, they are ridiculing Mahaprabhu, because Mahaprabhu is exhibiting his ecstatic symptoms and he is chanting and dancing, whereas the sannyasis, they are just studying Vedanta Sutra and primarily they are speculating on this. So they said, Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar Acharya said, we can't tolerate this. Our heart is breaking hearing this. So, oh my Lord, kindly do something about this. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he just smiled. He didn't say anything. So in fact, Mahaprabhu visited Varanasi because three were desiring the visit of Mahaprabhu. One was Chandrasekhar Acharya, next was Tapan Mishra, and also a Maharashtrian Brahmin. All three were great devotees of the Lord. And rest of the population, they were staunch Mayavadi sannyasis. So they desired the presence of the Lord. And they sincerely desired that the Lord would convert them into Vaishnavism. So to fulfill those desires, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went there, and indeed he fulfilled those desires, because when Mahaprabhu smiled, soon after a Brahmin appeared and he invited Mahaprabhu for a lunch. He said, all these great sannyasis are coming, they were Mayavadis, and oh my Lord, you also joined them. I would like to serve you along with them. So Mahaprabhu accepted that invitation. So now here, the point is, when it is mentioned that Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar Acharya, they were very much morose because of the ridiculing statements of Mayavadi sannyasis against Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Prabhupada mentions that since Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar Acharya couldn't defeat these Mayavadi sannyasis based on Shastra, or even if they actually didn't present any arguments based on Shastra, Srila Prabhupada writes that they are actually exhibiting the symptoms of a Kanishta, the symptoms of a neophyte devotee. So this is one statement. So can we, just with that, can we say that they are completely Kanishta in all respects? The answer is no. We cannot call them if they are, yes, it's a point. They are manifesting as part of Leela, one symptom of a Kanishta. But we have to understand they are eternal associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the further section, it is mentioned in the 68th branch of original tree of Purushottam, and it is mentioned that 71st branch is Chandrasekhar Acharya. It's mentioned Sri Chandrasekhar Vaidya. He is one of the Mahaprabhu is the tree, and different branches are different great devotees who are coming in the cyclic succession. Rightly from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chandrasekhar Acharya, they are actually in the disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they are coming in the disciplic succession, and they are gurus. So we have to understand, the point is, we have to understand the two sides. We cannot just judge based on one incident and say, oh, they are just neophytes. You know, we are already advanced, but they are neophytes. But we have to see both sides. That is the point. Next is very important, because when we deal with the devotees, again, we have to qualify devotees. It's a fact. Even though we respect all the devotees, because that's our philosophy. Trinata pisuni chena tarorapi sahishnana amanana manadena kirtaniya sadahari. So if you want to chant the holy name all the time, the qualification is Trinata pisuni chena. That is, one should be more humble than a blade of grass. It is Trinath api sunichena. It's not Trinath iva sunichena. Iva means just like. Api means even lower. And Tarodapi Sahishnuna, that is the tolerance, is compared to that of a tree. Then offer all respect to others and not expecting on any respect for ourselves. This is a very high platform. It is very difficult. Even to come to that platform means very difficult. We have to aspire. So, but in the Vaishnava etiquette, there is a training. Yes. How can we do? We have to start respecting devotees. First, we have to start respecting devotees. Mean even we qualify Vaishnavas also based on seniority. Even though we say, okay, all are devotees, but we respect them according to seniority. So this is a very practical application that we can take. So just like here, the Swami Karishi, he is qualifying Maharaj Parikshit because of various reasons and telling that, okay, his son had committed such a great offense. In the same way, we have to qualify Vaishnavas also. And what is the first factor? There are different factors which are considered in terms of who is a senior, who is a junior. One is initiation. When one took initiation. So that is considered one factor of respecting a devotee. So Srila Prabhupada, when he classified devotee, he said, you know, he's my senior disciple and he's my junior disciple based on when they got initiated. But at the same time, when we apply this principle, we have to be very careful. Why we have to be very careful? Because there could be a devotee who is practicing for a long time. Due to some reason, he didn't get initiated. Maybe aspirant, he didn't get initiated due to some reason. And if we think, okay, I got initiated before him, then we say, you know, he is junior to me, then it's an offense actually. Even thinking like that is an offense. So one has to be very careful even when we apply this principle in our life. So even when we are saying, okay, seniority based on initiation, still one has to be very careful. Second factor mentioned is age. Age of a devotee. We have to respect age. One may be, it happens many times when you preach to someone or if somebody is taking up Krishna consciousness, maybe by age they are junior in terms of Krishna consciousness, but age-wise they are senior. So if we don't actually respect age when we preach Krishna consciousness, it may not be effective. We can see that, even in preaching. However, what to speak about if he's already a devotee and he is much elder to us, one must respect that age. So that is very important. Third consideration is Varnashram consideration. That is what Varna and one ashram one belongs to. So it may not be, Varna as such may not be very applicable to current system because we don't classify devotees according to Varna. You know, it is considered an offense to say he is a Shudra Vaishnava or is a Kshatriya Vaishnava. We don't say that. So in general, in a Vedic system, Varnashram is a consideration for respect. And also Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. Yes, that is definitely considered as a factor. So the highest position is that of a sannyasi. So sannyasi must be respected. Any sannyasi must be respected as a spiritual master. So that is a very important point. Because at times we tend to think that, okay, he is a better person and he is a lower person. Even among sannyasis, among swamis, we may think, okay, he is better and he is worse, like that. That kind of mentality, we can discriminate. So which is not correct. We have to respect. And it's also mentioned that out of humility, an advanced devotee may show respect to us, even pay obeisances unto us. If we pay obeisances, a senior devotee may pay obeisances back to us. But still, we shouldn't think that we actually deserve that respect. We have to understand it's only out of the humility that they are paying respect to us. It's not because of our qualification. So it's a very important point again. Then another consideration is position, even in terms of management. If somebody is in a managemental position within a temple who is higher, then one must respect them as senior, even though lower by age or other qualification. So even managemental position is considered a factor for respect as a seniority, because otherwise it is not possible to keep order even within the temple. So that's another factor. Next one, and it is considered the foremost among all different considerations, is the spiritual advancement. So Srila Prabhupada gives the example of Shukadeva Goswami himself. He was just a 16-year-old boy, and all in the assembly were much more aged, and they had much more respectable position in one sense. Still, everyone was ready to listen to Shukadeva Goswami. So that is considered the foremost qualification. That is the spiritual advancement and the ability to guide others spiritually. So that is the foremost qualification. So we are trying to develop that quality to respect all and internally not desiring any respect. So what to speak about, you know, demanding respect. Even internally not desiring any respect. Finally, I would like to comment on one more point. That is, here, Shamika Rishi is taking responsibility of the situation. Even though his son has committed the sin, he is taking the responsibility. And he is telling, okay, he is the cause, and he is not just he, the whole Brahmin class is attributed with responsibility for the degradation. Not just the Sringi boy, not just the Shamika Rishi, but the whole Brahmin class is the cause of deterioration in the age of Kali. So Shamika Rishi accept that for the entire class of Brahmins, just because of the sin committed by his son. So very important point here, because two verses before this point is mentioned. Tad adhyan naha papam upayeti ananyayam. So naha, it is used in plural upon us, and we, it is mentioned, we shall be responsible. So the explanation given here is that, and for all these sins we shall be responsible. So one point we can learn from here is, even in such a havoc, in such a very difficult situation, Shamika Rishi and the entire Brahmin class is taking responsibility. That is one point. Second, one could ask how the whole Brahmin class is responsible for that, for a sin committed by just a boy. So it is mentioned in Varaha Purana that in Kali Yuga, even demons take shelter of Brahmin class. Rakshasa Kalim Ashatya Jayante Brahmana Yonishu. So being a Brahmana in the age of Kali is not at all a big qualification, because it is mentioned Varaha Purana that Rakshasa means the demons, Rakshasa Kalim Ashatya, by taking shelter of the age of Kali, Jayante, they take birth in Brahmana Yonishu, in the families of Brahmins. So it is mentioned that Shamika Rishi used this term Naha, we, because of this reason. That is, it could see, it started from Sringi, but in the future many would take shelter of the Brahmin class. They may have some of the abilities of Brahmins, intelligence, etc., but they would use it for a wrong purpose. So that is the degradation of the Brahmin class, which is prominent throughout. I have many personal experience. One story I will tell and stop. I had a boss when I was working quite a few years back. He was a chain smoker, and he was drunkard, and he used to do all kind of nonsense. And he was our boss, and we used to have knew each other. And he invited all of us for his son's upanayan. Upanayan. So the sacred thread ceremony. So we went to this place, the whole function, how he was dressed in dhoti, not even kurta, and just a chadar as a Brahmin, and the full tilak and the whole, it appears that he's a pure Brahmin. And so many Brahmanas around him, and the whole yajna is going on, and whoever came were given gifts, we all got gifts, and it's a proper Vedic system, and after that the feast, everything paka. So if anyone would actually go and see him in that position, would think for sure that he's a paka Brahmin, he's following all the principles. But I was shocked. It was a shock for me, because I had never seen such a thing before. because he used to always smoking, drinking, and you know whatever he speaks, it used to be just junk. So this is an example. Rakshasa kalim ashritya jayate brahmana yonishyo. So that's the reason here Swami Karishi is actually using the plural, explaining that we Brahmin class in general is responsible for the degradation of the age of Kali. So even though Swami Karishi, even though he's taking responsibility, he's an advanced sage, so that's why he's able to present various reasons showing the qualifications of Maharaj Parikshit, and he's condemning his own son. So I stop here and ask if there are any questions or comments or corrections. Yes, Prabhu.
Govinda Prabhu, you once tell us how Mahaprabhu snared the bride of the cardinal's
husband. I think that will take time. So maybe some other time. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. Where the teachers are coming from. Okay. Yeah. One point is that, say, we don't have a parampara of kshatriyas. That's a fact, correct? We don't have. So, a brahmana can teach, but he has to learn. Brahmana can take up that role to teach, because it is brahmanical to, even if a brahmana is, a brahmana can train a shudra, brahmana can train a vaishya, a brahmana can train a kshatriya, and of course brahmana can train other brahmanas. So it doesn't degrade them. A brahmana training a lower class doesn't mean that he's lower class. Yeah, like Dronacharya. So it is possible for brahmana to train other classes. So that is the reason why Srila Prabhupada wanted brahmana class first. Because if brahmana class is present, then they can train the other classes. So that is one aspect to it. Second, in a practical consideration, the devotees had originally a kshatriya kind of party. In USA, they had a party. Devotees had a party to, you know, for the election. What anyone remember the name? The God in, what is that?
God We Trust.
Yeah, the God We Trust. Yeah, they had a party, and I heard this. I heard from Shesha Prabhu. So Shesha Prabhu was, you know, he was trained. He was getting trained in the military academy in USA. And then he understood, you know, that's not the way. He was primarily interested in the politics, and was interested in the welfare of the whole country as such. So he was getting trained in this military academy, and he dropped out. He actually got out from there. And then he got attracted to this party. So he became a party member, and he was quite attracted, and that's how he came to Krishna consciousness. So that was, and in Prabhu's time, that was an attempt, kind of a political attempt. And then it continued for some time, and then Srila Prabhupada said, now you should stop this, because you are not qualified. You cannot handle the whole situation. Because to be, actually you are being with this whole maya of political affairs, and having a devotee party and keep going with that, it needs a lot of maturity and, you know, a lot of skills, and, you know, one has to be really Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada said, we had to stop this. So then they had to actually stop that. So if you consider, I don't know whether devotees are now ready for such a matured attempt in terms of bringing in Krishna conscious political party. It's a kind of a Kshatriya affair. So that is one practical consideration I can see in terms of actually going forward and ruling the world. Would you like to say anything?
Just trying to work out where, my meditation over the last couple of days, well, the last couple of weeks, is culture.
Mm.
The culture needs to be there. The culture was lacking and shrinking.
Yes.
It was immature and experience. So where's the culture going to come from? Now, ultimately, it has to come from us.
Mm.
So the Brahmanas have to come first, but my question is, where are the Brahmanas going to get their information from to be able to teach the Kshatriyas?
Yeah, primarily from Shastra.
From Shastra.
Shastra, that is the source. So, yeah, I don't know how the applicability of Dhanurveda in the current context, or at least the principles, that is there in the Shastra. The military science in itself is different, if you are considering that aspect, or the administrative principles are in the Shastras. It is there, but it's again a great deal of study, and it's possible. Yeah.
What do we do with the situation where we find somebody wants to be respected as a Brahmana? I'm a Brahmana, and you should respect me. They may not say that,
I think you had to chant sincerely if you want. if you want, there is no other option, because I was just thinking on this point. That is, in the Shikshashtaka, if you move from one, if one actually feel desperate in developing the holy name, you know, developing the proper chanting, then in that desperation, the humility comes. So, you know, at one point, all devotees, I don't know, I have to come to that stage, you know, actually feel real desperation for the holy name, and from that understand, you know, I am not qualified. Because there is always a force of maya, always think I am this, I am that. So Durdevam Idrisham Ihajani Nanuraga. So understanding Durdeva is seeing our unfortunate circumstance. So, you know, basically, you know, or everyone, you know, who haven't developed strong attraction for the holy name, you know, can see that Durdaivam, that is this unfortunate situation. Everything is there, you know, Krishna's holy name is there, Krishna's qualities are there, we can read everything, Krishna's pastimes are there, and still we don't have that attraction, you know. When you see that, you know, everything is there, but there's no access. So when one actually sincerely realizes that I have no access to them, just like licking the outside of the honey bottle, you know, the honey is there. We can see when we read Bhagavatam, or I can see, you know, such an wonderful activities of Krishna, such an amazing things, but I have no access. You know, then it becomes, you know, I had to develop that. I feel personally, you know, I should develop that. Okay, I don't have that. So I had to be humble somehow or other and pray to the Lord and get to some degree, at least personally, I can say I should at least move in that.
That's us.
Yeah,
but
that's
what about
us.
That's somebody else's. That's somebody else. You know, because I'm a manager.
Yeah.
That's my service.
Yeah.
And sometimes you see in the devotees there's this desire to want to be respected, and how do you deal with that? When it's not it's antithetical and antithetical to our,
yeah,
our culture.
Yes, it is, yeah.
And you can see it here. Sringi is a good example.
Yeah.
He was very, very proud of being a Brahmin.
Yeah.
Mm. So how do the Kshatriyas deal with the proud Brahmins?
one answer I could think, you know, if they hear, actually speaking, if they hear from, say, in a setting of Bhagavatam or in a lectures, if we hear this point, it makes a difference for all. I don't know, but I can only speak about me. It makes a difference. When we hear, actually, if somebody presents a point, you know, very nicely on this, then actually it feels, yes, you know, Krishna is speaking for me, you know, so hearing should make a difference. That's what I can think of. Generally, it does. If somebody is, you know, hearing, then there has to be some impact. Because it may not be, it may be difficult, I don't know, in your situation you could, but I don't know if we can correct straight away. You want desire, you have desire for such and such thing, I don't know, maybe not for relation, I don't know. But in a common setting, it is possible to make, you know, this statement, so...
Well, unfortunately, sometimes in those circumstances, what happens is that the person won't hear from others because they think they're superior.
It's a difficult, yeah, difficult situation, yeah, difficult. Maybe a very supreme, you know, like a...
to hear from others.
Others, yeah. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why we should be hearing, yeah, regularly from others.
Prabhupada himself heard from his disciples and encouraged, so.
And enjoyed it.
Yeah, enjoyed. In fact, a very interesting point in that Prabhupada's one letter, don't be a more bigger Paramahamsa than your guru. So a few of his disciples, they were not listening to the Bhagavatam lecture because their godbrothers were giving lectures, so they didn't want to listen. The Prabhupada said, I am listening to my disciples and don't be a bigger Paramahamsa than me. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.